Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO. Representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor Ron DeSantis jumps into the fray over importing prescription meds.
I mean, do you think I'm just going to, like, bring in a bunch of drugs from Pakistan off the street and, like, you know, somewhere and just throw them on the... I mean, come on.
Today, legislators came one step closer to fixing a nearly decade-old problem that's been plaguing the homeowners insurance market.
And in 2018, there were over 18,000 property AOB lawsuits.
And a controversial measure that would give more districts the option of arming teachers draws emotional debate on the Senate floor. Plus, should notaries go digital? There are only days left in the annual lawmaking session and bills are dying. I'm Lynn Hatter, and all that's ahead on Capitol Report. As Governor Ron DeSantis's proposed Canadian drug importation plan looks poised to pass into law this year, he and other proponents are mocking critics as fearmongers. Ryan Daly reports the governor's defense comes amid attack ads ramping up in Florida markets.
You know, just think about it, like when you see some of the arguments against about, like, I mean, do you think I'm just going to, like, bring in a bunch of drugs from Pakistan off the street and, like, you know, somewhere and just throw them on the, I mean, come on.
That's Governor Ron DeSantis at a town hall on prescription drug costs Tuesday, hosted by the American Association of Retired Persons, or AARP. As attack ads claiming his proposed importation program will flood the state with unvetted counterfeit drugs become more visible on social media and TV markets, DeSantis and supporters are hitting back. Senator Aaron Bean is the measure's principal backer in his chamber.
What would I do if I were drug companies charging the highest price on the planet? I would fight this at every cost. I would create groups that have fancy names but are really just drug companies saying this is bad news for seniors, trying to scare seniors, trying to scare families, bringing in China and illicit counterfeit drugs. That's not true. It's just not true.
What Bean characterizes as fear-mongering is something he also asserts is misguided, as the practice of importation already exists.
40% of our drugs right now in the state of Florida come from another country already.
As Bean's bill has advanced through the Senate, many have traveled to Tallahassee to share stories of paying exorbitant amounts for drugs they need to simply stay alive. Philip Combs of Madison County spoke at the AARP town hall about getting gouged at the pharmacy.
Even after the insurance company approved for me to take the meds, I still ended up with a copay of over $400 a month. That's for one drug. That would be about a fourth of my monthly budget just for one drug. And what am I to do about the other five medications that I have to do?
And DeSantis says because of overregulation of the industry, even generic drugs that are typically thought of as a cheaper alternative can have prices driven up.
I used to think, you know, the brand name, but the generics were cheap. And that there is some truth to that. But even the generics sometimes, if you get a monopoly on a generic, sometimes there'd be drugs that had been in existence for decades, and then a company would go through the administrative process and they'd be the only ones making it, it'd be $50,000 or something just obscene.
In closing, DeSantis told the crowd to push back on the attack ads meant to counter his plan.
And I think when you see a commercial saying call to stop the bill, if you call and say to pass the bill, I think that sends a very loud message.
Frankly, this is just because pharma is saying it does not mean that that's not true.
Priscilla Vanderveer is vice president of public affairs for Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, also known as pharma. She's among those who feel DeSantis's plan represents a risk to consumers and their health.
While I understand that folks think it's relatively easy to set up a state program that could do the same thing as the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, I think that that is really potentially very naive and could really harm Floridians in a way that would be irreversible for some folks.
Vanderveer asserts there's a misconception by the public as to how the program would function.
What we're talking about here are, you hear people say, we're just buying drugs from Canada. The drugs are just meant for Canadians. That's not what's going to happen. Canada is not interested in selling the medicines that it has available for Canadians to Americans.
Rejecting DeSantis's claim that Canadian authorities will be able to safely vet the drugs that are directed to Florida, Vanderveer paints a bleak picture of what she says the process is like.
They are talking about wholesale distributors in Canada who will order these drugs from anywhere they want all over the world. They'll come to Canada, they'll slap a sticker on it that says Canada, and then they'll mail it to the United States.
Even if the Florida legislature passes the bill this session, it still must be approved at the federal level by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. DeSantis and proponent lawmakers seem confident the measure will get a federal green light, but Vanderveer doesn't buy it.
U.S. Health and Human Services will likely not approve this plan, but again, there's always the risk that it would. And that sets up a precedent for this to happen more broadly, and someone will get hurt.
Still, the proposal looks to be in good posture heading into the tail end of Florida's legislative session. The House has already passed its version of the plan, and on the Senate side, the measure is prepared for a vote by the full chamber. I'm Ryan Daly.
Lawmakers took a big step today in addressing what property insurance companies have called fraud for nearly a decade. It's called assignment of benefits. The fix makes several changes that lawmakers believe will help lower the cost of homeowners' policies. Blaise Gainey has more.
Assignment of benefits, or AOB, is when a homeowner signs over their rights to a contractor to negotiate directly with the insurance company. Sometimes this can be used properly, but bill sponsor Pensacola Republican Senator Doug Broxton says that hasn't been the case.
In 2000, there were zero AOB lawsuits. In 2006, there were less than 700. And in 2018, there were over 18,000 property AOB lawsuits.
The reason the number has grown is because of a loophole in the current process. It's the one-way attorney's fee provision that makes an insurance company essentially pay all the litigation costs. Citizens Property Insurance CEO Barry Gilway says this incentivizes contractors to file lawsuits instead of trying to work with insurers.
45% of our claims are litigated simply because, you know, we don't have any opportunity to actually work with the insured to or the contractor to adjust the loss. If we attempt to adjust the loss, then they don't discuss it with us. They just bring suit because they know that the plaintiff costs, there's no risk. The plaintiff costs are being paid.
The cost insurance companies must pay is then passed on to consumers through a rate increase. Senator Broxton's bill will change the one-way attorney fee provision by not allowing the contractor to use it when an AOB is signed. His bill goes a step further by giving a homeowner the option to fire a contractor and get out of an AOB agreement within 14 days of entering the contract. It also requires homeowners insurance companies to sell policies without the AOB provision. That's something Tampa Democratic Senator Janet Cruz likes, but also thought it should be required that those policies not cost as much.
For the exchange of giving up rights presently held by homeowners, it only makes sense that there be at least a set minimum savings for homeowners.
St. Petersburg Senator Jeff Brandis says the legislature shouldn't tie the hands of insurers by demanding a set amount of savings on non-AOB policies.
the way that it's drafted simply says that insurers must provide a 7.5% discount. It doesn't say up to 7.5%. It says they have to provide a 7.5% discount, lower cost to the consumer. But that's, so that's a, just a structural problem with the amendment itself, is offering no flexibility.
But Cruz says without the writing in the bill, policyholders could be left with the same rates and worse off. Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Gary Farmer tried to further clarify the logic behind it.
Without this amendment, homeowners, consumers will not get the financial relief they're entitled to based on the representations we've heard for years as to the need for this legislation. This is a good amendment. This ensures that when we're taking away these rights, that the loss of that value is passed along to consumers.
The amendment failed on a 17-21 vote, but not without gaining support from Brandon Republican Senator Tom Lee.
I just rise in support of the amendment. It's not a slam dunk. It's a little bit of a jump call, but given all a jump ball, but given everything that has been laid out in committee, the meetings where we've blocked out the sun, saying that the world was going to come to an end, one insurance executive after another parading up. You know what? I think this is healthy medicine, and I'm going to support it.
The bill was placed on third reading. Ultimately, legislators look to pass it, but want to give more time for debate to make sure it will close the loophole that has caused rate increases across the state. I'm Blaze Gaynor.
Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers get emotional over a decision on whether to allow more teachers to carry guns in schools.
Those that have law enforcement 20 to 25 minutes away need another option to protect those kids. And I am not going to stand on this floor and prevent them from having that option.
Could Florida become the latest state to outright ban texting while driving?
This is simply a hands-free bill, and we left in the provisions where the clerk may dismiss a citation if a person goes to school or buys a wireless device.
Also tonight, lawmakers say it's past time Florida notaries jumped into the digital age.
This bill brings the law of signing documents into the technological era in Florida.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Lynn Hatter. An effort to let school districts choose whether to allow more classroom teachers to carry guns has cleared the Senate. The broader bill incorporates the recommendations from the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission. It was tasked with examining the response and lead up to the Valentine's Day school shooting. Most of the debate Tuesday centers on arming teachers. Teachers in Florida school districts that have already opted into the program are allowed to carry guns, but only if they're not just dedicated to the classroom. Republican Senator Manny Diaz's bill expands the provision to make all teachers eligible for the so-called Guardian program. Diaz notes it's only a small part of the bill, but it's played an outsized role in the debate.
Is that this bill does not arm one single solitary teacher. What this bill does is provide the 67 school districts, the 67 different communities in this state with the ability to do what they need to do to protect our kids.
Some 25 counties have implemented the Guardian program in part. Diaz says another 14 have expressed interest. The Miami senator says not every school can have a police officer or a sheriff's deputy on hand, and providing the option to have a teacher stand in their stead gives districts flexibility.
Those that have law enforcement 20 to 25 minutes away need another option to protect those kids. And I am not going to stand on this floor and prevent them from having that option. Because while I represent a particular community, we are passing state statute here. And it is our job to provide those options for every single county across our state.
Participating teachers would have to meet more training requirements and get in-depth background checks. But the plan still does not sit well with Democratic Minority Leader Audrey Gibson. She says the approach to school safety is wrong.
Centuries protect from the outside, not the inside out. And our teachers deserve to be protected as well. And I think we have to consider, again, that has been raised today, where are these firearms going to be kept? What impression are we giving to our students? If we really want to create the safest environment at every level of every school and at every school in all of our districts, we should protect from the outside in.
Fellow Democratic Senator Lauren Book served on the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission and helped craft the group's recommendations. She says lawmakers should put reason before rhetoric.
By the time former Deputy Peterson arrived outside Building 12 at 2:24, 24 people had been shot on the first floor of that building. It only took 98 seconds to shoot 24 people. That's over half of the members in this chamber. 11 of the 24 died within seconds. That's one third of us.
Within 3 minutes, 34 people had been shot. Half of them died, and the gunman was able to reload 5 times. Book wonders what would have happened if someone had intervened at least once in those brief moments. Yet, while she did sit on the commission and even voted in favor to bringing the issue before lawmakers, Book did not vote for the bill.
And so I have said that there is so much good in this bill. Enhanced reporting data requirements around CSER, the creation of a behavioral threat assessment database, accountability measures to ensure safety compliance. I must, at the urging of my community, vote no today. But it's an exceedingly, exceedingly painful vote.
Book joined her Democratic colleagues in voting against the bill, while Senator Ana Terry Flores was the lone Republican to do the same. The proposal isn't just about whether to allow more teachers to carry guns. It also expands mental health treatment for students, requires schools to provide more accurate information on crime, and puts tighter controls in place for tracking students with disciplinary problems. Now that the Senate has approved the measure, it heads to the House, where it is likely to be approved. A measure that paves the way for online notaries is ready for a full floor vote in the Florida House. Regan McCarthy has the latest.
Miami Republican Representative Daniel Perez says Florida's notary system is stuck in the past.
This bill brings the law of signing documents into the technological era in Florida. Specifically, it enables the notarization and witnessing of documents to be conducted entirely electronically. Via remote presence through video.
Perez says sometimes people need to get official documents signed but can't be there in person. He gives the example of a recent trip he took.
I was leaving to go to Colombia for a wedding. I get to the airport with my wife. When I get to the airport with my wife, I notice that I did not leave a power of attorney with my in-laws just in case, God forbid, something were to happen to my daughter. And it was a little too late. I'm in the airplane, I'm gone. If I would have been able to go online, have a power of attorney signed through an app, through a website, regardless of whether I was in Michigan, in the airport, or in Colombia, this bill would allow for me to cover that base.
But some, like St. Petersburg Democratic Representative Ben Diamond, have concerns about exactly how the process would work.
Because you're making an electronic document, like an electronic healthcare surrogate, for instance. How is that document presented to the hospital or to the healthcare facility? In other words, I represent the county where we had the Terry Schiavo case. Is the family member supposed to print a copy of the electronic document to take to the healthcare facility?
Diamond says it's common for facilities to ask to see the blue ink or original paperwork, but he says that wouldn't exist for a document created electronically. But Perez says there's no requirement for blue ink copies now. Meanwhile, Maitland Democratic Representative Joy Goff-Marcel has concerns about the potential for fraud and even plain confusion.
This is going to open it up to a lot of different people that are going to be trying to do this to make money. And as an attorney who does practice probate law, there's a lot of safeguards in place where I talk to the people and make sure they understand. So I'm wondering how a notary and two witnesses just coming together would be able to do what a lawyer would normally do in that situation.
Perez says again, there's currently no requirement that an attorney be involved in the process of making and notarizing a will. And he says his legislation adds new safeguards. It requires a person to answer certain questions on video when a person is signing their will, including has anyone forced or influenced you, and are you of sound mind?
In other words, what this bill will do is it will take the will portion and the notarization online to a recorded process that we will be able to use into the future, thus allowing us to not only move into the year 2019 when it comes to wills and online notaries, but at the same time being able to avoid future litigation because we will have this all recorded with a qualified custodian, which is also defined within the bill.
A similar bill in the Senate is ready for a floor discussion. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Now here's Gina Jordan with a look at what's coming up tomorrow in the legislature.
Here's a look at what's happening tomorrow in the Florida legislature. The House will take up numerous issues during a floor session. Health education curriculum for K-12 public schools may soon have to include lessons on the dangers and signs of human trafficking and techniques to recognize and respond to child abuse. With parental consent, a student may opt out of portions of comprehensive health education. Additional restrictions may be placed on ballot initiatives. Among other things, the bill would require petition gatherers to register with the state. Ballots would have to contain information about contributions raised by the amendment sponsors and whether amendments could lead to tax increases. An office within the Florida Department of Children and Families provides coordination on issues relating to homelessness. A bill revises the state's process by adopting the federal definition for homeless and aligning other state requirements with those at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The full Senate is scheduled to take up a wide-ranging education bill that creates a new voucher system and revamps the teacher bonus program. Expanding school choice is a priority for Governor Ron DeSantis. A regulatory framework may be set up for a hemp industry in Florida. A program would be created in the Department of Agriculture as the state looks at the potential of hemp as a new industry. Insurers may be required to offer a comprehensive major medical policy or contract that does not exclude, limit, or deny coverage due to one or more pre-existing medical conditions. That's some of what's coming up at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
President Trump is letting Cuban exiles sue foreign companies doing business in Cuba on confiscated property. But will it work the way those exiles hope it will? WLRN's Tim Padgett explores the issue.
Americans who have had their private and hard-earned property stolen in Cuba will finally be allowed to sue.
Last week, National Security Advisor John Bolton came to Miami to announce President Trump is unleashing a tool of the Cuban embargo. Title III. Title III lets Americans, in this case mostly Cuban Americans, sue companies that do business in Cuba on property taken from them by the Communist Revolution. No U.S. president has ever activated that embargo provision before. But Trump is on a campaign to get tough on Cuba again. And that could keep Miami attorneys like Marcel Felipe very busy.
We're in the process of identifying all of the different companies that would be implicated in trafficking on their property.
Felipe heads the Inspire America Foundation, a pro-democracy NGO. He advises lawyers who represent Cuban-American families like the one he's describing here. They once owned property on what is now Jose Marti International Airport in Havana. The regime confiscated those assets in the 1960s without paying them. Today, foreign, non-Cuban firms use it. So Felipe calls it property trafficking.
The airport is a hub where you're going to have a lot of different foreign owners.
The family's remaining anonymous until it files a lawsuit for restitution in a U.S. federal court. There could be thousands of suits like theirs seeking millions of dollars. And, says Felipe, they'll have a larger foreign policy aim.
It will have a chilling effect on new investments in Cuba.
If companies from countries like Spain, Canada, Russia, and China face this kind of legal action in the U.S., they may think twice about setting up shop in Cuba. That could choke the island's threadbare economy and, the thinking goes, the regime itself.
Well, I think Title III is the strongest possible measure that the U.S. can impose on Cuba.
Anna Carbonell is a Republican political consultant in Miami and a Cuban exile activist. Title III is part of the 1996 Helms-Burton law that strengthened the U.S. trade embargo against Cuba. But now that President Trump has pulled the Title III trigger, will it really work the way so many Cuban exiles hope it will?
The devil is in the details.
Cuban-American attorney Pedro Freire heads international practice at the Akerman Law Firm in Miami. He represents companies that may be targets of lawsuits brought by Cuban exiles who claim their property was confiscated. Freire says collecting claims will be hard if the companies being sued have no assets in the U.S., and if their home countries don't allow money from Helms-Burton actions to be collected there. Freire adds there's a reason that all these years this embargo weapon was little more than a threat. No president used it in the past for fear other countries might take similar actions against U.S. firms. President Trump's decision to let Cuban exiles sue companies operating on their confiscated property in Cuba won't affect U.S. companies. That's because U.S. airlines and cruise lines only transport visitors to and from the island. I'm Tim Padgett in Miami.
Finally tonight, a measure requiring drivers to use hands-free devices has one step left to go in the Senate. Morgan Martin has that story.
Senate Bill 76 allows a law enforcement officer to pull over people who use their cell phone while driving, unless they use a hands-free device or Bluetooth mode. The goal of the bill is to make texting while driving a primary offense instead of a secondary offense to reduce accidents. Spring Hill Republican Senator Wilton Simpson is the bill's sponsor.
This is simply a hands-free bill, and we left in the provisions where the clerk may dismiss the citation if a person goes to school or buys a wireless device.
Last week, the Senate Rules Committee approved the bill. One mother spoke about passing the bill in remembrance of losing her 25-year-old son to someone who was texting and driving. Miami-Dade County resident Debbie Wanenkoff says the bill will help save lives.
On July 1st, 2018, Governor Nathan Deal signed Georgia's hands-free law. He broke down and took a moment to gather himself before saying, "This legislation is Georgia's way of saying today is the day we say no more." Georgia saw a 22% decrease in collisions in the first month. This legislation is saving at least 20 lives each month in Georgia.
The House has a similar bill, but it doesn't impose a hands-free requirement. Both proposals aim to allow officers to cite a motorist without another reason and require an officer to record the race and ethnicity of a violator when issuing a citation. I'm Morgan Martin.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back Wednesday. Join us each night for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. Rambana & Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana & Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. And from the Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families. Committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org.